I want to talk to you again about Din Safek and Din Vadai, because I'm beginning to realize that you could write a book on this subject. And I found a piece here in Cheskas Abatim that I wanted to share with you. And Rav Kahn's notes, this you'll find on the bottom of page 130, going on to 131, which I'll give you in a second. He says, with regard to Safek and Vadai, that if a person, let's say, definitely has half of the mammon, that's half it's coming to him, b'tor Vadai. The second half of the mammon is Safek. So it seems from the sugya here in Baba Basra, Perek Chesk Sabbat Daf Lamid Gimel Amid Aleph, Tosis Dira Maskel Hochi Garsinon, that in Kolator Kula, that second half is a Safek. And we would have to deal with that Safek in and of itself. But the exception to the rule, Tosis says, is Yerusha. That if one person is a Yoresh Vadai, which means he has a definite half, the other person claims that he has half, but he can't prove it. So on that second half, we have a Safek. Tosis says, in such a case, the first Yoresh, who's a Vadai, gets everything.
Oh, is that only true if he has half, or if he only has a quarter?
Okay, the same will apply if he only has a quarter.
Okay, it's not because he's an equal.
Oh, you mean what happens if he definitely has a quarter? Oh, if he definitely has a quarter, that means he's a definite Yoresh. Tosis is talking about a case where he might not have anything. That's the key.
Okay.
Because if he doesn't have anything, he's not a Yoresh. So he may have half because he's also a brother. He may have nothing because he's not a brother.
Right.
In such a case, Tosis says that we give the entire Yerusha to the definite brother. And the Rav wants to suggest that even though on half the Yerusha there's a Safek, nevertheless there's a special halach according to Tosfos that with regard to Yoresh, there's no such thing as a Safek Yoresh. He doesn't register. He says, Kol echad tzarich levarer shu Yoresh. There has to be an absolute clarity, a clarification.
He can't be levarer either.
And if he can't be Mavarer, then he's not a Yoresh. Until you prove it, even if the facts and figures seem to indicate you might be a Yoresh, might being a Yoresh just doesn't cut the mustard. It's not a Yoresh.
No, but if he's a Yoresh Vadai in half, but he's still a Safek on the other half, so how does... You
know, no, again, he's definitely a brother. If there's no other brother, he gets the entire Yerusha.
Sure, that's for sure.
Now there's a second brother who's claiming he's a brother. He can't prove it. If he can't establish it, even though he's successfully created some sort of a Safek in our mind, nevertheless, he doesn't have rights to the second half, even to get a quarter, because he's not a Yoresh. Again, here's the language of the Rav. Rak echad shu Yoresh Vadai, yochol... He can be ma'akev who monea ha'yerusha mimenu legamre, because there's no such thing as a yoresh mitzad safek. And Tosfos equates it to chalukas eretz Yisrael. Just give me another minute, Alan, and then the floor is yours. I just want to get the picture here. He says the ein zed do militalis. It's not like the case of Shnayim Ochsin Vitalis. Ze Omer Kula Shali, in which case one person definitely has half the talis. Ze Omer Chetzi Shali, but on the other half there is a Safek. There we grant the second one has a Safek, half the Mammon. And why is that? Because on the second half of the talis there is a bona fide Safek. And in such a case we say Achloku. But in the case of Yerusha, there's a special halacha that we don't apply the principle of Shnayim Ochsin, and a Yoresh is not considered a Yoresh until he establishes himself as a Yoresh.
Okay, what if there's two women?
So it starts here and it ends on the top of the next page.
What if there's two women, and they both prove they're brothers, but they can't prove who was actually born first?
Okay, but even if he can't prove that he was born first, but he's definitely proved, if he's definitely adduced evidence that he's a Yoresh, so he has a Shem Yoresh. Once he's in the parish of Yoresh, if we don't know where to place him in the parish of Yoresh, that already becomes Hilchus Fekus. Tosis is talking about a case of a person who claims he's a brother, a long-lost brother that went out to Medina Sayyam, and now he's coming back to claim his Yerusha, and he hasn't yet proven that he's a Yoresh. And Tosis says, the way the Rav interprets the Tosis, you'll have to go through the Tosis yourself, that in the case of a Yoresh, it's not enough to create a Safek. you have to establish your status as a Yorish. After you establish your status as a Yorish, then we can deal with all the Sveikas in the Nachla and how to divide up the Nachla.
Now, when you said in the Shnayim Ochzim Betalis, yes, one calls Kula Shali and the other one says Chesya Shali.
Right.
So you say Yochloko on the other half because there's a Safi.
Correct.
But the other one says Kula Shali. He is definitely a machzak in half because the other one's only
correct. So that's what the Rav says, that this halacha that is no din of a safek that Tosus establishes and formulates, that's only in the case of the Yorish. Uh-huh. In Kol Dinei HaTorah, Dinei Momenus tells me that safek is yachloku. We're going to divide it up if there's a safek. The exception to the rule is the Yorish, that even if we have an objective safek, that's not enough to establish him as a Yorish.
Okay.
Marshal of Dover Doma. I'll give you a marshal of Dover, but don't equate it. But let's say a person is a Sufik Mamzer.
Yeah.
So the Torah says that Sufik Mamzer is nothing. It's not even a Sufik. He's not a Mamzer. Until you're a Mamzer Vadai, then you're not a Sufik Mamzer. I'm just using that as a marshal. And the Rav is applying this to Yorish. There's no such thing as a Sufik Yorish. If you're a Vada Yorish, you're in the picture. Now we can deal with Hilchos Sveikas and divide up the Nachla. But if not, if you haven't even established your status as a Vada Yorish, then you're nothing. It's very similar to what we discussed last week about Eidus, if you remember. We said that there's no such thing as a Sufik Nogea the Eidus, that we should say, well, his Eidus is a Sufik, because maybe he's Nogea B'Dover, maybe he's not Nogea B'Dover. The Rambam says that even if there's a Chashash al Derech HaPlia, that maybe he's Nogea B'Dover, he's not an aid. The Torah wants a Vadei aid. We don't rely on maybe he's a good aid. No. So that's why I say you could write a whole book on this topic. I really honestly believe this, called Din Sufik Din Vadei. That sometimes we enter into the Sfeikas and we give them a status as a Sufi, and sometimes the Torah says, no, it's got to be a Vadei. Less than a Vadei won't do. Sometimes we're going to say that something which is a Sufi is defined as a Vadei, that we're going to get to in a minute. Sometimes we're going to say that something that has a suffix to it is not even a suffix. You hear? It goes in all directions. And every case of suffix has to be classified and defined. For example, here's my next example. You have the case of a tumtum. At the moment of his later, we don't know if he's a zocher or he's in a kefer. Later on, we're going to find out, after the nikra, we find out that he's a zocher. So the Gemara establishes in Bava Basra Daf Kuf Chav Vav Amid Beis that in such a case he doesn't get Pishnayim from the Nachla as a Bechor, even though he's the firstborn, even though we know he's a Zohar. Why? Because at the moment, the Gemara is Xeris HaKos, that at the moment of his Leda, we had doubts as to whether he was a Zohar or a Kefa, therefore he's Mufka from the Parsha Bechor. Meaning that as far as a Bechor Lirusha is, you need a Vadei Bechor at the moment of his labor.
What about Mila?
Before you get to Mila, let me just, Alan, you're always a few steps ahead of me. I'm sorry. So again, what's going on is an unbelievable Gemara here, Vav Basra Daf Kuf Chav Vav Amid Beis, if you get a chance to look at it. That the Gemara is saying that with regard to your status as a Bechor, to get Pishnayim, number one, you have to be a Vadei Bechor, which means you're a Zohar.
At time of Leda.
And number two, it's got to be at the time of the Leda. Now you can ask me about Mila.
Okay, what about Mila? If it was a suffering at the time of his...
There's no such Gzeres HaKosah. The Gemara is especially Afusa in Bechor. Again, what I'm trying to show you, maybe you're not following me, that as a general rule, in Hilchos Sveikas, we try to clarify the Sufik. If we can't clarify the Sufik, then it's a Sufik, and we split it, or we do whatever we have to do in a Sufik. But in certain very unique cases, which I want to list today, that's our goal for today, the Torah says there is no such thing as a Sufik. The Torah goes out of its way to tell you that a Sufik is not a Sufik. It doesn't even register. I gave you the example of Mamzer. A Sufik Mamzer is not even a Sufik. Number two, I gave you the example of an aid. An aid is not an aid if he's not a Vadei aid. There is no din of Sufik. You can't say, well, maybe he owes him the money because maybe the aid was kosher. Now I gave you a third example of Yorish, that if a person doesn't have full-fledged evidence to establish himself as a Vadei Yorish, then he's not even a Sufik Yorish.
Okay.
Now I'm giving an example of Xeris HaKosin by Bechor, that he has to be a Vaday Bechor. Again, these are all exceptions to the rule. I don't want you to miss the forest from the trees.
Just
a general rule, every suffix has to be clarified, and if we clarify it, that's fine. If we don't clarify it, there are also rules that apply to a suffix. But I'm trying to list the exceptions to the rule where the Torah says that unless it's a Vaday, it doesn't even register. It's not even a suffix. A suffix is zero. It's not 50. It's not a question mark. It's zero. It's vade nothing. I'll give you another example. We don't know if this guy is a rotzeach. Do you remember this, Sam, that we discussed this? We don't know if he's guilty of murder.
Yes.
Right? The case is he threw a stone.
Yeah. Okay.
And mechzal mechza, it's called kavua, and we don't know if that's called a maiser etzicha. So you and I would say, well, if it's mechzal mechza, it's a suffix. In fact, we checked the body and we found out that he killed a Jew, Nebuch. Now comes along the Gol Adam and he kills this Suffolk Rotzeach. So what do we do with the Gol Adam? Well, L'chor, the Gol Adam is also a Suffolk, right? Why? Because if the Rotzeach was a Rotzeach, then the Gol Adam is Ein Lo Dom, was allowed to kill him. If on the other hand he wasn't a Rotzeach, then the Gol Adam is a Rotzeach, we have to put the Gol Adam to death. We don't know what to do with the Gol Adam, therefore let him live. No. The Brisker Rav says that Rashi goes out of his way at the end of the first parak of Ksubas to say Safek Nefashis LaHakel means Vishaftu Eidu Vitzilu Eidu, we're going to save him from the Yad Gol Adam, and we're going to establish that Yesh Lo Dom, and if the Gol Adam kills him, the Gol Adam will be put to death. Why? Because Safek Nefashis is not even a Safek. He's a Vadai guiltless person. There's no such thing as maybe he's guilty of murder. Perhaps he's guilty of murder. Safek Rotzeach. There ain't no such din of Safek Rotzeach. It's either all or nothing. And if it's nothing, then it's then and somebody kills him, he's chayav misa.
Well, isn't Safek isn't a shogeg or Ritzicha the same thing as being a Safek Rotzeach, really?
Why do you say so? That's not apparent to my mind.
He's either a Rotzeach.
I'm not trying to be. Alan, you're going to walk out of here saying Rabbi Berzin is trying to be argumentative to
me. No, I'm not. And I'm just trying to ask the question.
It's the post-tish of mood. No, I'm just saying. I'm not trying to be argumentative, but Shogig is a different question. Shogig is not a Suffolk Rotzeach. Shogig is about the quality, so to speak, of his Ritzicha. His quality was not exactly what you'd call deliberate. It was somewhat deliberate in the sense that he neglected to do what he had to do, but it wasn't intentional in the full sense. That's called Shogig. What we're dealing with today is not the quality of an action, it's the Suffolk where the action took place or not. Although, I have to admit to you, Alan, that you're touching on the case of Matana Tmirta. You remember the case where he hides the Edim when he gives a Matana on Karka. There, I would say it has to do with the quality. And there we have a suffix. Is he really interested? Is he deliberate? And has he made a complete decision, B'Gvir Ustas, to give away his Karka? He didn't get anything in return. Sometimes the Gemara says that we know he has G'vir Ustas because he took the money. You remember that?
Right.
I got Unse Gomer Makta because he received the payment. Here he didn't receive any payment. It was an outright gift. And we have to have a Gemuras Das Shlemu Gemura for an outright gift. It's above and beyond Mechira. Mechira, even a half-baked Gemuras Das is enough because at least he got paid. So he got its value. But in the case of Matana, he didn't get its value at all. He got nothing. He ends up with zero in his bank account. It was an absolute gratis gift. So the Gemara says in the Sefer Bava Basra that unless he has Edim who came there to see and witness the Matana, and this reminds me, we've had discussion about Edus Lekiyum Adover, if you recall, if the Edim are hidden away, it means he didn't have Gemir Stas. No, maybe he did have Gemir Stas. Why not call it a Suffolk Matana? And therefore it will depend upon who's Mukhsak. No, the Gemara says he's an absolute owner. The no sena matana is the owner. There's no strings attached. There's no sfeikis. And the Rambam says, as we saw the other day, that a matana tmirta is not a matana. You and I would have called it a suffik matana. We don't know about the quality, the nature of his das at the time that he gave this gift when there were no edim there. The Rambam says no, unless he took edim and he made the kinyan in their presence. We assume that he didn't have gemiras das. We don't know that he didn't have Gemir Stas, pardon the double negative. Maybe he did have Gemir Stas. The answer is, in Suffolk, it's not a Matana. The halacha requires Vadai. Here's another example where the Torah requires vaday. Also in the same sugya, in Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Chav Vav, now we're going back to Kuf Chav Vav, no, also Kuf Chav Vav and Beis, in the sugya of Yakir. There's a Tosfos, and basically it starts with the Rashbam, actually, even before Tosfos, the Rashbam, in Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Chav Beis, Amid Beis, Divra Maschil Aval, says a Gevaldi Yechidish, that let's say the father, before he died, there's a halacha called Yakir, he recognizes his Bechor, and he testifies, this is my Bechor, correct? So the Rashbam says that what happens if there's some lack of clarity in the Haggadah Ha'av? In other words, there's a concept called Haggadah Ha'av al Bno Yakir, this is my Bechor. The Rashbam says that in such a case where we have a suffix in his Haggadah, then there's no din of Yakir. Yakir requires Vadai, and a suffix is not Yakir, and if it's not Yakir, then he will not get even a portion of the extra portion. He's not a Bechor. So I'm going to ask you to look up these Marmakomas. I'm just giving you sort of
an Mesupik if it's a Bechor.
No, not that the father's Mesupik, but we're Mesupik about his Haggadah. We don't know if he really meant it or if he said it clearly. Did he point to him? Did he not point to him? There's certain sfeikas in the Haggadah. Now in Eidus, we have halacha, as we discussed before, of Eidus Vadai. The Eidus has to be 100% clear. Now we're saying that even in the din of Yakir, the Rashbam is activating or applying the principles of Eidus, that just like Eidus needs Vadai, absolute clarity, otherwise it's not Eidus, it doesn't register. So too, Yakir is considered Haggadah's Eidus when he testifies about his son that he is a Bechor. Now, I think I mentioned to you once that Rav Scheinberg is very fond of this chakira of Din Vadai and Din Sofik in his Mishmeres Chayim. And one of the cases that he quotes is the principle called Sofik Deoraisa L'chumra. And he wants to know if that creates a Din Vadai or a Din Sofik. So this is in Mishmeres Chaim Amud Lamed Beis. Unfortunately, I don't have a copy of it, so I apologize for that. Billy Nether will, you know, if you press me on it and remind me, I'll bring it in. And he wants to know about the halacha of Safek Lechumra as it applies to Brachos.
As it applies to?
Brachos. Let me explain, if you hang on for just a minute. This is Rabbi Kiva Eger, which is printed in the Gilyon, you know what we call Gilyon Ashas of Rabbi Kiva Eger on the page, in Brachos Daf Yud Beis Omen Aleph. And Rabbi Kiva Eger says that although we have a principle of Safek Brachos Lehakel, that principle, says Rabbi Kiva Eger, does not apply to Birchas Hanenim. It applies to all Brachos with the exception of Birchas Hanenim. Which means the following, that in the case of Suffolk Brachos, Rabbi Kiva Eger says we have a Suffolk. And the question is, what do we do with a Suffolk? How do we deal with a Suffolk? What do we, Machria, what do we Paskin actively? What are you supposed to do? Halacha l'maaseh, you have a Suffolk in a Bracha. What do you do? I'm checking my house for chametz. I don't know, did I make the Bracha? Did I not make the Bracha? Some forgetting, I can't remember. I'm all submission. Says Rabbi Kiva Eger, if you don't know if you made the Bor Priya Eitz, then in that case of Safek, you're going to make the Bracha. However, if you don't know if you made the Bracha on Bedikas Chametz, the example we gave, then you will not make the Bracha. And the question is why? And if I understand the Mishmeres Chaim correctly, Rabbi Kiva Eger is implying that Safek Deoraisa L'chumra, which is a principle that operates whenever I have a Safek Isur. So for example, I don't know if this is Nevela or it's Shchuta. I don't know if this is Shuman or Chelev. Then I have to treat it L'chumra. And that Halacha is Halacha Vadai. So that even though in Safek Brachos we say, you know what, when in doubt, leave it out. Because we don't want to get involved in Brachos, in Lotisa Hashem Hashem L'shav, right? We want to stay away from that. But in the case of Birchas Hanenim, we have a different principle here. And that is that if you want to eat this apple, you're involved in a suffek iser gzela, so to speak, right? Kemila, it's like me'ila. And therefore, you have to treat that as if you're vadai chayiv in the bracha. Forget about lotisa. Lotisa applies when you don't know if you're chayiv in the bracha. Leave the bracha out. But in the case of suffek iser, where the Torah says you want to eat this piece of meat, and you don't know if you made a bracha or you didn't make a bracha, then what you're involved in is a suffek gzela and a suffek iser me'ila, and therefore Rabbi Vegas says that you have to make the bracha because suffek daraisa l'chumra. Because if I don't know if this is stolen goods or not, I have to avoid it like the plague because of suffek daraisa l'chumra. But you're going to tell me, what do you mean suffek daraisa l'chumra? At the end of the day, you're left with a suffek. Correct? L'chora, right? Before we saw the Mishmeres Chayim. So if you're left with a suffek, then the principle in brachos, universally, is suffek brachos l'hakel. How can you now tell me that in the case of a suffek bracha, I make the bracha when the rule is suffek brachos l'hakel? The answer is that Rabbi Kveger, in the case of Birch Sanenim, is introducing another element, another variable into the equation, namely it's a suffek isur. And if it's a suffek isur, not just a suffek bracha, now I have a din of suffek isur l'chumra. You'll ask me the question, okay, suffek isur l'chumra, but what about suffek brachos l'hakel? And we're going to suggest that suffek isur l'chumra is b'toras vadai. So this is the exact opposite of what we've been saying until now. Until now, we've been saying that sometimes exeris hakosav is the Torah requires a vadai, and a suffek doesn't even register. Now we're taking it from the other extreme, and we're suggesting that sometimes the Torah says about a suffek that it should be considered as a vadai. And if you don't assume it's considered as a vadai, you're going to have to come up with another answer to this question. How could Rabbi Kiveiga say that in the case of suffek birchas anenim is chayav bebracha? Why? Because it's a suffek iser. So what if it's a suffek iser? Even if it's a suffek iser, does blife a suffek? If after all is said and done, all you can generate here is a suffek. And in the case of suffek, the halacha is suffek brachos lahakel.
Okay, I'm failing to get the connection.
Okay. Maybe I didn't explain myself well.
No, it's not you. Okay, so if you have a suffix, it's a suffix if it's an iser. A suffix brachos lahakel means that there's no chiyuv on me to make a bracha, a chiyuv to make brachos, right? But there's a problem over here that I might be doing an iser of gzela. So
therefore,
let's say if somebody makes a neder, right?
Right.
And according to the chvesa, if it's usher, then you can't eat in my place, right? So you can say so. If you don't, okay.
I'm not following.
I don't get that.
Okay. Forget my muscle.
But one second, Sam. I just want to comment on what you said before. When you say suffik brachos lahakel,
that means I'm not mechuyev to make a bracha.
Oh, so that's why I wonder.
I'm allowed to steal from God.
Well, just one second.
Because you won't be held accountable if you didn't make a bracha.
When you say, let's say for example, I don't know if I made the bracha on this mitzvah. Don't make the bracha. Am I saying that he's not chayiv in the bracha? Klapi Shmaya Galia. I don't know. Maybe I am chayiv in the bracha. But on the other hand, I can't make the bracha because the principle is that in suffik brachos, you leave out the bracha. Call it a Kedushas Hashem, Yira and awe from the name of God. I can't recite the bracha. The ineffable name of God. I can't enunciate it. But I don't know if I would say I'm not chayiv. I'm chayiv in the bracha, but I'm prevented from implementing that.
No, there's two things. Now, if there's a chayiv to make a bracha on a mitzvah, there's a chayiv to make a bracha on eating something, but on eating just something else, you're not allowed to steal.
Correct.
So, even if I'm exempt in terms of the chayiv, so I wasn't a kayim and I say, so to speak, but I still can't steal. There's a condition.
But the only question I have for you is, again, if you want to tell me that if I don't know if I'm chayiv in the bracha on this piece of this apple, so don't eat the apple. So you can tell me, don't eat the apple. But now you're telling me, Rabbi Kiveiga, that I should make the bracha.
Okay.
The moment you go that step further and you say make the bracha, then aren't you undermining the principle of suffek bracha?
Here's my harebrained example, right? I am assuring my apple to you unless you make a bracha on it, right? You don't know if you made a bracha on it. Suffek brachos lahakel, you don't have to make a bracha. You're not allowed to eat my apple because it's aser.
No.
So I don't know if suffek brachos lahakel will be translated to my iser neder on you.
But I don't understand, Sam, how you solve this problem. The problem is, tell me not to eat the apple because I don't know if I'm stealing it or not. That I grant you. But then tell me something else. If I don't know whether it's gzela, make a bracha.
Granted.
That part I don't understand.
That I gotcha.
And that's why I think the punchline might lie that in Safek Isur L'Chumra,
you would say don't eat the apple.
Yeah, don't eat the apple. But here we're not saying don't eat the apple. What we're saying is Safek L'Chumra tells me that he's a Vadai. And if he's a Vadai, then he has to make the bracha. And if he has to make the bracha, it no longer falls under the category of Safek Brachas L'Hakel.
Wait a second. Here's the problem. What if there's no more apple? You already ate and there's no more left. You have to make brachas over La Siyasim on Brachas Anen. So, would you make the bracha if there's no more apple?
Obviously not. I mean, again, the Gemara is a sugya,
but according to, if you're going with
Mila Kris, Lachas Shuv, remember we discussed that somewhere in Memtes or whatever.
Is making it over La Siyasim so powerful that it's mevatel the bracha, the yichiyah of the bracha altogether? Or do you say...
What are we talking about? Because if you're using the term overlas yosem, then it has nothing to do with eating an apple. So I get confused.
Yes,
now.
It does. I mean, you may...
What does eating an apple have to do with overlas yosem?
You may eat the before.
Okay, that's not overlas yosem. That's a mati, right?
It's a generic term.
You need a mati. So you need a mati on the isem ve'ilah. So the bracha has to come before. Overlas yosem has to do with birchas ha-mitzvahs.
Okay, but that's all right, excuse my using the wrong
term. Yeah, no, I get confused.
What I'm saying is you have no more apple.
Yeah.
You make the bracha beforehand as a mati, but you don't have any more apple. Can you still make the bracha?
To be mater what? I mean, again...
But
you can't be mater in Avera. You can do tshuva, but you can't be mater in Avera. To be mater is something you need to be mater before you do it. That's what the meaning of a mater is. The purpose of a mater is to say that what I'm about to embark upon is absolutely permissible. If I've already violated the law, now I can do tshuva, that's all you have.
You still have apple left, yep. And you make the bracha.
Oh, now you have apple left.
Of course.
That goes backwards.
But I don't need any reason.
Oh, no. It won't help you. It won't help you for the apple that you already ate.
It doesn't.
But now I want to continue eating. Now the question is,
if it doesn't, then
do I need a bracha or not? Comes along Rabbi Kivagan and says, even though I don't know if I already potted myself on this second half of the apple with the bracha I made before I ate the first half of the apple, I will have to repeat the bracha again. I don't know.
Why would I need Rabbi Kivagan for that? It's just
because Safik bracha is lahakim.
But it's Safik bracha. It's Safik bracha on what I already ate. It's not for sure. There's not for sure that I made a bracha now.
No, the question is, does this bracha generate a chiyuv? Does this apple generate a chiyuv bracha?
Of course.
I don't know.
Because I don't know if I made one.
So maybe I made one already. If I made one already, then I'm not chayv in the bracha. So whenever I don't know if I'm chayv in a bracha, the Torah says, Halacha says, don't make the bracha.
So what if I'm not sure if I paid you for something or not, but it's a suffix, I may have paid you for it. Can I take it just because... Is it Safik that maybe I did?
So that's Rabbi Kivega's point. What you're saying is exactly what Rabbi Kivega is saying, that if you want to eat the second half of the apple, you can't tell me Safik brachas lahaka. You're about to steal the apple. And you don't know if you stole the apple.
Yeah.
So I would have said to Rabbi Kivega, if he was here, yeah, I would say, let's paskin in this case, don't eat the apple because maybe you're stealing the apple. No, Rabbi Kivega says, you got to make a bracha. How can I make a bracha? How can I make a bracha? That's the question of Rabbi Kivega. The halacha is that if you don't know whether you're chayv in a bracha, don't make the bracha. Absolutely, we will object, we will block the doors and not let you come in here to make a bracha. We don't want your bracha. So how can Rabbi Kivega say, I don't know whether this half apple requires a bracha, not make the bracha. How can he say make the bracha? Okay. Tell me don't eat it, because maybe I'm a gazlan, I'm moral behavior, but don't tell me to make the bracha. What we're suggesting, if you identify with the question, is that maybe what the Torah is saying is that in the case of Safek Iser, because of Me'ilah here, then you are considered Vadai. And if you're considered Vadai, the Torah says that I should look at this piece of Suffolk Nevela as if it were Vare Nevela. Now, if it's Vare Me'ila, I need a bracha to be materit. And it no longer applies to Suffolk Brachas Lahakil because I have a Vadai and it's no longer Suffolk.
And if you ate a shear already, why don't you just make a bracha prona? And then you know you've definitely...
Yeah, maybe that's the best idea. Maybe that's the best idea. But since you mentioned bracha prona, I would ask you the following question. What happens in a case where I don't know if I benched or not?
You know, you bench, it's just, that's zero.
Happens to me all the time.
It's a dear
rice. Oh, so the question here is, I don't get it. according to everything we've said now, the universal rule with regard to brachas is sofik, brachas lahakil, don't make a bracha b'sofik. The exception to the rule, says Rabbi Kivega, is birchas hanenim. Is birchas hamazon is very far from being a birchas hanenim. It's a birchas shevach hodo, it's a classical bracha. Now you're telling me to make the bracha. So what are you going to tell me? Because I have a sofik chiyuv. Okay, but a sofik chiyuv doesn't undermine a din of sofik brachas lahakil. Yeah. And I think here we have to go one step further, Abosai, and we have to say not only is a sofik isur lechumra b'taris vaday, but a sofik mitzvah lechumra is also b'taris vaday. And that I don't think Rav Scheinberg has in mind. You with me?
I hear you.
In other words, if the whole premise of Rav Scheinberg is that to allow you to make a bracha, you need a vaday, and since you don't know if you're violating me'ila, Rabbi Kivega says in Birkas Hanenim, you have to make the bracha, and that means that safek me'ila is lechumra b'taris vaday, then I would go one step further, and I would say it's not limited just to isurim, but the same logical application or derivation should apply to mitzvahs as well, to
chiyuvim.
That when the Torah is, correct, only if it's d'oraisa. Right. And if the Torah says, don't do this, then if I don't know, then I'm vaday not allowed to do it. If the Torah says, do this, and I don't know if I did or I didn't, if I am or I'm not obligated, then the Torah is saying you are obligated. That this new din, that safek generates a chiyuv, creates a new chiyuv b'taras vaday. So, and the mele I don't apply the principle of safek brachas lahakel. So, why? Because I'm definitely chayv in birkas hamazon. Because safek mitzvah doraisa lechumra is doraisa. And it's doraisa b'taras vaday. I was oker the safek, and I replaced the safek with a vaday. It's the exact opposite of everything we've been saying until now. There's no theory. I'm not asking this as a question. I'm just pointing out that if you're writing a book called Din Safek and Din Vada, you have to divide the book into two halves. One half is going to talk about a case where the Torah requires Vada and Safek doesn't even register as a one percentage. It's nothing. It's garnished. And the other half of the book should be dedicated to cases where the Torah says that we're going to upgrade Safek and define it, consider it as a Vada.
Is Birchas Hanenim D'oraisa or D'rabbanan?
I don't know. I would say it was the Rabbanan.
Is it tzav for the Raisa?
But no, if Alan's asking me, he must know some.
No,
he
because,
must know some Shagazarye.
No, no,
you know, no. I'm afraid he of Alan.
No, because,
he's going to pull out a Shagazarye or something, no, you know, with an Orach Leber.
If you tell him it's Me'ila, then it's a D'oraisa.
Well, again, it's. I'm sorry that I called it Me'ila. The Gemara says it's Kim Me'ila. You know, it's like Me'ila. You know, it's not technically Me'ila because no one was Magdashid, but the Gemara quotes the Pasuk, Lashem Ha'aretz Melo. I think the Rav used to say Lashem Ha'aretz Melo is a Lashon Hegdesh. Yeah. Like, Kadosh Lashem, you know, Ola Lashem, Chatos Lashem.
So it's Gezela then? Is it Gezela?
Well, again, it's Me'ila or Gzela. We discussed this at great length. That Rav Chaim used to say that what Gzela is to Momen Hejot is Me'ila is to Momen Hegdesh.
But it's definitely, but that makes it a D'oraisa because that's
again. Gzela. But technically speaking, in order to be Momen Gavah, you need someone to come along and be Magdashit.
What do you mean Magdashit? It was never Me'ila.
Nobody who?
Never made a Chulin.
No, everything is chulin until it becomes hegdish.
Everything is
right. This is chulin. This table, this anisti. You know, no. Actually, this is.
So that. So why is it gzeila then? Why is it gzeila?
Because it's. You know, this is the philosophical point. You know, Sam and I, before you came in, Alan, were discussing the Rav as a philosopher. So, you know, the Rav could give a 4-hour shiur on Birchas Hanenim and then completely without any hesitation, shift into a philosophical mode and try to explain why Birchas Hanenim is unique and why it's similar to Me'ila and God's, you know, ownership of the universe, and he'll go on for another 4 hours in Ashkafa, you know. That I can't do that for you. I can just tell you that technically this world is chulin until it becomes Hegdesh. This table is not Hegdesh.
Okay.
If you come along and you know, you enjoy the benefits of this table, it's not Hegdish. Hefker, for example. There's no Gzela. What if I'm Nene from Hefker? Am I a violation of Me'ila? So why isn't this apple any worse than Hefker? You know, on the contrary, I own the apple. Right, so where do you generate gzeila when I eat my own apple? The answer is no, the apple belongs to God. What do you mean the apple belongs to God? Was it Hegdesh? Was somebody Magdish it? It's my apple. I was never Magdish it. And Hefker for sure it wasn't. So there's some rabbinic institution that considers it like Me'ilah. That God says, don't you dare benefit from this world without acknowledging first and foremost that I am the creator. Elokeinu melech olam, the king of the
universe. That's
the Rabbanan say. That's what the Rabbanan say.
Okay, yeah. So it's only the Rabbanan.
It doesn't matter. Safik Yisra L'chumra, even on an Yisra Rabbanan. Okay, you have to know why. You know,
yeah,
okay.
Why would that be?
Correct.
And then why shouldn't it still be on also for B'dikas Chometz? It's also a Ke'en D'Oraisa, even though D'Oraisa is But the Rabbanan, since they made you go to be and to look for it, it's Ke'en D'Oraisa.
No, you're right, but we're viewing the bracha on B'dikas Chometz as a separate entity. You're right. What generates the bracha on B'dikas Chometz? It's the B'dika.
Right.
But the brachas itself is a new chiyuv. I can be yotzei my B'dikas Chometz without being yotzei the mitzvah of bracha. They're two independent chiyuvim. When we analyze the bracha and whether or not I should recite the bracha, in case of safek, the overriding principle, the rule is safek brachas lahakel.
Right. Why?
Because of the fear of enunciating God's name. We have a natural awe.
Require it.
Well, I don't know. That's not my point. My point only is that if the bracha and the mitzvah are one and the same, then you might ask yourself the question, is that mitzvah and that bracha d'oraisa or not? But if the bracha is a separate entity, that's clearly d'rabbanon. But the point that I wanted to make was that the rule of thumb here is Safik Brachas Lahakel. Okay, let's go on. Alan, I didn't mean to spend the entire hour that we have here. Yesterday was Tisha B'Av, we didn't even meet.
That's right, that's what we have to for sure make up for that.
So then you have to stick around for another hour, except to have a Nidush here.
That's that also.
Come back after lunch.
We can do that. One last question. What about Birchas HaTorah?
Safik brachas lahachmir. Why? Because since the bracha and the mitzvah hainu hach, therefore the Torah says that yichai b'toras vaday, and this chiyu b'toras vaday is going to allow you to make the bracha. Every bracha needs some sort of permission. What is that permission of vaday chiyu? In the case of Birchas HaTorah, we have a vaday chiyu. Now, your chiddush would be, let's say I don't know if I make Birchas HaTorah. So what I'm suggesting is, based, again, this the Mishmar Chaim doesn't write, but I'm thinking out loud here, that in such a case you would have to make the bracha. Why? Because I'm suggesting, since the chiyuv and the bracha are one and the same, then the principle of Safik Doraisa Lechumra on a mitzvah Doraisa generates a vaday, and therefore I undermine and suspend the principle of Safik Brachas Lachem, because it's not a Safik Bracha. It's a vaday bracha.
Why is it
a vaday? Maybe I made the bracha already, right, and I fulfilled my mitzvah. The answer is the Torah says, if you don't know, then you're obligated. That's Berzon. Would Rav Scheinberg accept it? I don't know. So B'li Neder, we'll take out Rav Scheinberg, we'll look up the Mishmar Chaim. I don't have it with me. I'm living in two parts of the city of Yerushalayim. Most people, you ask them, where do you live? They don't know. In my case, I give you two different answers. I live in Rehov Scholzen, number 16. You're always invited. If you're ever near Harno, please drop by. Scholzen 16. And I also live on Rabbi Meir, number 3, which is right here a few minutes from the Amic Learning Center in Katama. So I live in two places, and it's very complicated for me because I can't always know when I leave my house in Har Nof what books I need for the shiur. So that's my problem.
I
tell you the truth, even if I knew which books I need, I don't always remember where the books are, if it's there or here. And this spills over to every aspect of my life. So, for example, I had a pair of sneakers prepared for Tisha B'Av. I thought I had them in Rabbi Meir, and sure enough, I had them in Har Nof. So I ended up wearing, I don't want to tell you what I wore here, because it might be a Shiloh Beged Isha, but hopefully nobody noticed it, so I can get away with it. Because they say the Beged Isha only applies if somebody can see, oh, that's a Beged Isha.
I could have given
if it's not Nika.
So I got another pair of rubber things. But I don't wear
I'm lucky. My father used to say the following: thank God my head is attached to my body, because if it wasn't, I would be looking for my head. And I say the same thing about myself. I live in two places, and I'm constantly trying to figure out, where did I leave this thing? So my wife and I have an unspoken rule. We have to buy everything in duplicates. You know, we have to have one there and one here.
Yeah, but you'll end up with two of them in one place.
Yeah, that's also true. Okay, let's try to go on and see if we can give a little bit more flesh and blood to this concept of Safek and Vadai. Here's a beautiful example. Let's say I don't know if I violated an Iser Kares. Now, if I definitely violated Iser Kares b'shogeg, chas v'shalom, I bring what? A karbon chatos. But if I don't know, what happens? I bring an Ashem Toli, right?
If you know you did something.
So the question is, what do you mean you bring an Ashem Toli? We have a principle in Kodshim that Safek Chulin Lazara is, you don't bring it. There's no such thing as a carbon on Safek.
But Hashem Tolei is specifically for that.
Oh. So how do you formulate it in Lamdashit terms? Yeah. The Machayev is Safek, but the Chiyuv is Vadai. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
Okay. So the one who develops this beautifully is the Briska Rav in Hilchas Mechusrei Kapara. If you can make a note of it, please. Perek Aleph Halacha Hei. And he quotes Reb Chaim. And he wants to suggest that there's a fundamental difference between a Safek violation of an Iser Kares, where the Torah says that the carbon has a Torah's Vadai to it, as opposed to a case of Mechusar Kapara, where the carbon itself is a Safek. And that breaks new ground in Hilchas Mechusar Kapara. So B'li Neder, once again, will try to get a hold of the Briska Rav. You know, of course, if Yechiel was still with us, he would have it within, you know, within seconds. And that's what we wanted.
He sends his apologies. He said he's washed out with the kids.
Yeah.
Washed out.
They're like taxing him.
Okay. Now, we have a Mishnah at the end of the fourth parak of Peah. Again, the same Chakira. It says, Safek leket leket. So now I have a Sofik in Matnas Aniyim, which is going to impact on Maisros, because Matnas Aniyim, Leket Shekapeh, is Potamina Maisa, but here I don't know if it's Leket. I have to give it to the Oni, Midin Sofik Leket, but Lechor, I'm only giving him a Sofik. Now you want to tell me that I might be Potur from Maisros, but maybe I'm Chayav in Maisa, because maybe it's not Leket. So the one who addresses this is one of the super commentaries on the Mishnayis at the end of the fourth parak of Peah, is the Tosus Anshei Shem. And based on the Tosus Shansei Shem, the Torah's Roim of Rabariye Pomeranchik that we mentioned many times at the end of the fourth parak of Peah, and he analyzes also the Tosus Yontif on that same Mishnah, he wants to come to the conclusion that in the case of Sofek Leket Leket, you're Chayev B'Torah's Vadai, and that's why you're Potem in Amas. Meaning, if it was pure Sofek, that would not engender a ptur in maisers. The halacha is that leket is potem in a maiser, but you don't know if it's leket. It's a safek leket. So how then can you be potem in a maser? And the diuk of the Tosus of the Torah's roim in these mefarshei ha-mishnayis, the Tosus Yontif, the Tosus Anshei Shem, is to come to the conclusion that the halacha of safek leket leket generates a chiyuv b'toras vadai. In other words, it has a full shame matnas aniyim l'chol adinim without any doubts about it. So once again, this is going to be another example where the Torah establishes, as an exception to the rule, that we don't treat something as a safek, but rather we upgrade it to a vadai. Even though b'metzius it's a safek, I don't know if this is leket or not, you know, the different dinim, if it went down the hole or it's on the top of the hole and all that stuff. But the Torah considers it as a vadai leket. If it was only a Sofek leket, if it blighted a Sofek leket with a chiyuv to give it to the aniyim, then I should be chayiv in maisers. Why is Sofek leket leket enough to generate a ptur of masras? That's only if I assume that Sofek leket leket is b'toras vadai. And again, it's very similar to what we said before, that the Torah starts with a suffix but upgrades it to a vadai. So again, I don't know, and the Metzius has never been clarified. I don't know if I ate Shuman or if I ate Chelev, or right, there are two pieces there and I ate one of the two pieces. So the suffix is an inherent natural suffix in the existing world. I have no way of knowing. But nevertheless, the Torah says, bring a carbon, and that carbon is a carbon vadai, called Hashem Tolu. So too, in the case of Suffolk Lechumra, where I don't know if I need a bracha on this apple or I don't need a bracha, the Torah says, treat it as if it's a vadai. Forget about the Suffolk. You start with the Suffolk, and then the halacha upgrades it to a vadai. And once it's a vadai, now I can go ahead and make the bracha, despite the principle of Suffolk brachas lahakil. And so too in the Suffolk leket, I don't apply the principle of Suffolk to be mechayavim in maaser, which I logically should based on the background, the existence of a Suffolk, but rather the Torah says Suffolk leket, leket, and that's a din fatai. Okay. Now, we have halacha called bari v'shema. And the Gemara quotes one man the Omer that says bari adif. And the question is obvious. What do you mean? I'm sorry. Did I get that right? Yeah. That bari is od. Okay. Now, the question here is obvious. The Tzad Shekineged says shema. Maybe I paid you. Maybe I didn't pay you. Right. So the halacha is, according to that man d'omer, bari adif. Now, the Torah says that tzedek tzedek tirdof, you mean you can't take money out of Reuven's hand and give it over to Shimon, illegally. How can we therefore, in a case of Shema, give the money over to Reuven, or whoever, whatever the names are? So I heard once from my Rebbe Rav Moshe Shapiro, that bari v'shema, bari adif is b'toras vadai. In other words, the halacha is that shema doesn't generate a suffix on the bari. It's not like we weigh the suffix against the vadai and we say, well, let's tip the scale in favor of the tainus bari against the tainus shema. Because if that be the case, you're still within the realm of suffix. How can you actively take the money out of the hands of the baldin who says shema and force him to pay the one who says bari, if the suffix is not clarified?
Because it's part of the question. Because the one who says bari says, you owe me the money and you didn't pay me.
Right.
The one who says shema agrees also he owed him the money. But he says,
right, so that's called a cheskas
chiyuv. So all of a sudden, both correct. Of them are modeh, both of them are giving
right.
me.
That's a cheskas chiyuv.
He still might be alive, the other guy.
Right.
No,
but let's say.
He was modeh, he was bari. Right.
No, but I'm saying, but just because the guy says bari, he might be a liar, and then doesn't.
No, but that's not the
money.
Point.
But let's say there's money on the table.
Oh, I got
right? Reuven's claiming that money is mine, and Shimon's saying it might be mine. So he's not admitting that it does belong to Reuven. Reuven, you're a Goslin. You know, I don't know if I don't know if it's mine. So in such a case, we're going to paskin according to one man the Omar. I shouldn't say paskin, but one man the Omar would maintain that bari v'shema bari adif. And we're going to grant the money over to the one who says it's definitely mine. So the question is, why isn't this Hilchus Fekis? So Rav Moshe Shapiro says you're going to have to assume that bari v'shema bari adif creates a vada. Otherwise, we don't have a right to actively take this money and grant it to so-and-so. Okay, so that's a din of muchzok. And in a din of muchzok, we're going to say lav bari adif lahotzi, because on half the talis, they're both equally muchzok. And therefore, we're going to have to split the talis. But I'm just saying, in theory, if there was no din of muchzakus, then the tainus shema is going to lose out to the tainus bari completely. We're not even going to give him a piece of the pie, because we're going to assume that bari adif b'toras vadai.
Okay.
I don't remember all the rayas. I just could tell you that he proved this from a sugya in Ksubas Daf Tes. I think Ksubas Daf Tes, if I remember correctly, is the sugya Pesach Pasuk Matzasi, is it not? Yeah. So let's assume it is for a minute. So what's the case over there? The Gemara goes back and forth. The Gemara has Suffolk Isur and Suffolk Mum. Correct? So let's say, for example, she wants to claim the Ksuba, And he says, but maybe it was a bia tachtov. If it was a bia tachtov, she has to forfeit the ksuba.
Correct? More than that.
Yeah, but I'm just saying in terms of the moment of ksuba, the Gemara has two parts to the sugya. One is as far as Iser is concerned, and the certain rules that govern Iser, and then the Gemara takes under a separate agenda, what about the chiv ksuba?
It's not tachtov, it's not absurd, right?
If it's tachtov v'rotzon, you're saying what?
I'm saying, no, if it's not tachtov, no. Right?
Oh, if it's not tachtov,
she gets less.
She gets less because she doesn't get zero.
Yeah, you're right. It's a question. Mana masayim. There's so many different. There's so many. What do you say?
I think it's
so. Yeah, if you want to take a look at the Gemara Ksubas, I don't have the Gemara Ksubas. So in other words, in Dini Mominis, she has a tainis bari. And he has a tainas shema. Correct? So the question is whether she can collect haksuba. So the Gemara says, Neman li osra lov, and Neman lafsida ksubasa. But he's Neman lafsida ksubasa. And Tosus says it should depend upon bari v'shema. So there, if you hold Bari Adif, is that's a Din Vadai. That since it's a Din Vadai, therefore we can allow her to collect her ksuba. You want to take a look and see. It should be, I think, Omar Abaye, if I remember again, this is from ages ago, a Daf Tesomit Beis on the top.
When you're saying she's never the Asrala, you mean she... What does she say?
She says that it was lav tachtov, and therefore she's muterasol.
It's lav tachtov.
Right.
Okay.
He's saying it was tachtov, but he doesn't know.
Okay.
And the Gemara says that neman liosra lo, that he found the pesach pasuach, and therefore it's a sofik tachtov, sofik lav tachtov. Then the Gemara says, but maybe it's a sveksveka, because even if it was tachtov, maybe it was not berotzon. It was ba'onis, except for the case of an eishes kohen. In such a case, the Gemara says, if there's only one suffix, then neman li osra ol.
Okay. And he has no choice in that. Once he
makes the claim in Bezdin, in Pesach Pasuach, is she's asura ol. Now the question is, what about the ksuba? She's claiming that it was lav tachtov.
Right. And he has no right.
Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel, Omer Pesach Pasuch Matzasi Neman Lafsida Ksubasa, that she loses her ksuba.
Right.
So the question is, if she's claiming it was Lav Taktov, why should she lose her ksuba?
If she has no right.
It says Lo Yehei Neman. Tosa says it's far to say that he shouldn't be believed. Tos says maybe v'mezid mishaker.
She has no either.
So I'm not finding bari v'shema here. That's the honest truth. So again, we'll leave it for another time. But you get the gist of it. The bare bones, the framework, the skeleton of it is that how can we be motzi mamon in the case of a suffix? The answer has to be that we paskin it's a vad. Okay. Now, I want to share with you something that I heard from Rav Dov Schwarzman, Zichron Uvroch. Have you heard of Rav Dov?
Yeah.
So he was talking about the din of Shvuya. The halacha is that Shvuya is Asura LeKohen, because we assume that she was violated by a goy in captivity. And the halacha is that if she claims tahorani, meaning that she was not violated, she's not believed. So Rav Dov asked the following question. There's a Mishnah on Daf Yud Gimel in Ksubis with regard to Muberes, a pregnant woman, and she's a Pnuya. She was not married. And the question is who was responsible for this situation of being Muberes? Was it a Kohen? Or was it a mamzer, or some other apostle, a goy? And therefore, if she had beer with a goy, she's not allowed to marry a kohen. So there, Rav Gamliel says nemetz, that she's believed to say ish ploni kohen hu, means he's a kosher, and she can be machshir herself. So why then, in the case of a shvuya, is she not believed to say tahorani? She's believed on herself to say that the boel, in the case of Uberis, the boel was a kosher, and therefore she's machshiras atzma, but she's not believed in the case of a shvuya to say that she didn't have this terrible bi'ila, and therefore she's ksher, she's not believed. So Reb Dov wanted to say that shvuya is a separate halacha, that sofik is kivadai, that the chachamim made a takana. Maybe this is called, I don't have it here, my loss of biyuchsin, I don't know, that a shvuya is asura lekohen b'toras vada, she has a din of a bu'ula. And if she has a din of bu'ula, she's not in a menace against that din, because the din vada. Mashenken, in the case of Muberes, we have no clue how she became pregnant, who was responsible for her becoming pregnant. That's a pure suffix, and it remains midin suffix. So I'm suggesting that this would be another example of din vadai din suffik, but in this case, as opposed to all the other cases, it's not an issue of whether or not, well, what's the status of a suffik? Is it zero vadai suffik? What is it? But rather to compare and contrast two different dinim. There's one din called shvuya, and there's another din called muberes. In the case of shvuya, it's a vadai. In the case of muberes, it's a suffik. And even though logically you would say that, how is Shvuya Vadai? We still don't know for sure. We have no clarification that she had a Be'ila, that she was Chashom raped during her captivity. We don't know that. But the Chachomim created this new state of being, this new halachic status of a Shvuya. It's a shame Shvuya. And that's B'toras Vadai, and that's why she's not believed to say Tahorah.
Is that true even if it's a Vadai she was not? For instance, she's still a Basula?
Well, there are many cases where we can bring testimony and evidence that, again, I don't know, you're asking about specifics, but rule, if we bring evidence that she was not violated, then she's Tahorah.
Okay.
But in the absence of evidence, Chachamim created this new status, this new category called Shvuya. And Shvuya is Asur B'Toras Vadai. She has a din of a bu'ula. For example, again, that's not here, but the Mishnah says that a shvuya only gets a ksubas mona. She doesn't get a ksubas masayin. And we're not going to deal with the ksuba as a suffik mamon and say, well, maybe she has a chazoka that until you prove that she's a bu'ula, she's not a bu'ula. No. In the case of shvuya, she has a din of a bu'ula. And that's why there's no ksubas psula for a shvuya, and that's the status of a shvuya. For example, a man marries a shvuya right after she gets freed, and he claims pesach pasuach matzasi. That has no implication whatsoever, because her status is that of a bu'ula. We're not even going to consider it as a suffix. Maybe she had a bi'ila tachta. No, she's becheskes bu'ula. That's a problem for a kohen, because a shvuya cannot marry a kohen. She has a din of a bu'ula legoy or
leposim. What about the
But in the case of a muberes, then for sure she only gets a ksubas mana.
Right.
That's for sure. Even according to her own admission, she only can get a ksubas mana. She's only claiming that she's allowed to marry a kohen, and Rav Gamliel says we believe her, and therefore we're going to allow her to marry a kohen, because in the case of suffik, her taina is believed. She has nemanus because it's a suffix. So Reb Dov wanted to suggest that in the case of a shvuya, she has no nemanus because she's going up against a vada. Okay. Now, I have here a note in my own handwriting, which is very interesting. It's a shir kloli from Rav Abba Berman. And to be honest with you, I don't have any recollection whatsoever of hearing Rav Abba Berman. I met the man once, but that's about it. In any event, apparently, maybe somebody published his shirim, and that's where I got it. I don't know.
His shirim published.
Published.
Sure.
So maybe, again, I don't know. I don't know if this is like looking for a needle in a haystack, but maybe if we can somehow track down this
Yechiel.
Yeah, the sefer called Shiurim Klolim Shel Rav Abba Berman. Then maybe what? So maybe we could find this shiur. And apparently, from what I have in my two lines of my own handwriting here, he wants to differentiate between what's called a ruba de isa kaman and a ruba de lesa kaman. And he wants to suggest that one is vadai and one is suffik. Now, when I saw this, before I read the second line in my writing, I thought what he was going to say, this is what I anticipated, lefi ani hazdaiti, that in the case of a ruba de lesa kaman, it's a suffik. Whereas in the case of ruba de isa kaman, it's a vadai, because we can count the rov. It's right there in front of us. Pumfaket. Rav Abba Berman says, if my transmission is accurate, that Fakert, in the case of Aruba de Isa Kaman, we have a din hachros ha-sofek, but it remains a sofek. It's only a din of hachra. And I'm going to mention the Nafkivin in just a second. Masha'enken, in contrast, a Aruba de Lesa Kaman has a din of a vadai. Now just give me a minute to theorize the nafkamina, and then we'll go back to square one and try to see if we can unravel this mystery. There's a rule that says that ruba v'chazaka, ruba adif. So again, if I have a chazaka, and I'm setting up a barometer here of COVID, the weight of evidence, then one notch higher than chazaka is rov. Okay, so chazaka is down here, and rov is up here. Now, Eid Echad is not believed against chazaka. Okay, unless it's biyado, that's the exception to the rule. We mentioned this before, but other than that, Eid Echad doesn't have, whenever there's a chazaka, the Torah requires two Eidim to be motzimidei chazaka, to contradict the chazaka. Eid Echad is not believed against the chazaka. Says Rav Berman, if an Eid Echad is not believed against the chazaka, then Kol Shkein is not believed against a rov, because rov is stronger than a chazaka, ruba v'chazaka, ruba od. Says Rav Abba, b'med varam amurim, when do we say that rov is greater than chazaka, and therefore the Eid Echad would certainly not be believed against the rov? That's only in the case of a ruba de lesa kaman, because in the case of a ruba de lesa kaman, the Torah considers it that much more than a chazaka. Chazaka is just a hachra, but the suffik remains a chazaka. But in the case of ruba de lesa kaman, the Torah is saying that's not just a din achra, but that generates a din vadai, and it removes the suffik entirely. So that makes it that much more powerful than a chazaka. And again, if Eid Echad is not believed against a chazaka, then he's certainly not believed against the ruba, but says Rav Berman, that's only a ruba de lesa kaman. However, if it's a ruba de isa kaman, then that rov remains a suffik, and Rav Berman wants to claim that the power of a ruba de isa kaman is inferior, it's even less than the power of a chazaka. And although Eid Echad is not believed lahakrish es ha chazaka, but he would be believed lahakrish es ha rov. So let's just summarize. According to the framework, the structure that Rav Abba Berman is suggesting, we have to see how he knows this and how he could prove this. You have the following three levels, okay? And then we'll talk about Eid Echad. We have the lowest level is called a ruba de isa kaman. Then we go up one notch and we get to a chazaka. And then from there we go up to the highest notch, which is called a ruba de lesa kaman. Now, where does Eid Echad fit in over here? If Eid Echad is makdish a chazaka, he's not believed. What about Eid Echad against the rov? So if Abba says, it depends. If it's against a ruba de isa kaman, let's start with a ruba de lesa kaman, a ruba de lesa kaman, which is even greater than a chazaka, then kol shkein Eid Echad is not believed. If on the other hand, it's a ruba de lesa, the isa kaman, ruba de isa kaman,
and he is believed,
then Eid Echad is believed. Now, again, I don't have access to the shir, but I can just say only one thing, and then you guys can rip it apart. It seems to me, first I thought this was counterintuitive, Adarav, I would say Ruba the Issa Kamana is something definite. I mean, I look at the Rov, I can count it, it's Befanai, you know, it's Mamoshistik, I can, you know, I could put it in the Chushim. Mashenkin and Ruba, the Lesser Kamana, that's sort of ephemeral, that's up in the air, you know, that's something that you either have it or you don't have it. But now I think that the intuition here is the following. Ruba de Issa Kamon, which might even, by the way, mean 51%, if you follow what I mean, 50 point whatever, that means that we're just simply calculating numbers. There is nothing to be machai of me to say that in any particular situation it belongs to the Rov. Do you follow me? There's a Chiddush Torah over here in Ruba de Issa Kamon that we assume that since we calculated here and we came to the conclusion that it's 60-40, that in this particular case, and I don't know what the nature of it is, it belongs to the 60 and not to the 40. That's not a logically compelling argument. So the Torah says be machriya, but leave the suffix as a suffix. I really don't know anything about this case. Masha'enken Aruba the Lesser Kamon, it has its own built-in logic to it. Let's say, for example, Rov Noshim Mubaros, you know, is Molidos Lesof Tes. You know, they'll give birth after 9 months and not 7 months. So why should I assume so? The answer is that's the way God created the world. It's built into nature that women should carry the full term. Sometimes I think Aruba the Lesser Kamon is a psychologically compelling argument. For example, if I take a loan from you for 30 days, I'm not going to pay you until after the 30 days. Why should I give up the rights that I have to the money? You were nice enough to extend a loan. Why should I give it back to you within 30 days? Etc., 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 in many cases. But what's common to all the cases of Aruba the Lesser Kamon, by definition, even though we have no real statistical cases in front of us that we can count, but what we have is some sort of a compelling logic that leads me to the Rov. And if the logic is compelling, then it says something about this particular case. Why should her biological clock, or why should his psychological motivations be different than anybody else's? And if there's something that compels other people to act in a certain way and behave a certain way, then it should affect him as well. Again, unless you prove that he doesn't belong to the Rov. But in the absence of that assumption, then I assume on the contrary that the same principle that generates Ruba the Lesser Kamon for you and for me and for him generates it for Ruven as well. And therefore, that's a proof positive that goes even beyond Chazakas. You know, Chazaka only tells me, be machriya the suffix, we don't know, let's leave it as it is, and so forth and so on. But here I have a Ruba the Lesser Kamon to really clarify. So Rabbi Arva Berman wants to say that in the case of Ruba the Issa Kamon, the Torah was machadesh, that, you know what, you don't know what the deal is, then treat it as if. But there's really nothing logically compelling. And therefore remains a suffix, and maybe even a suffix that's lower than a chazaka, and eight echad could be believed against the Ruba de Issa Kamon. My only problem is I don't have even a mar mokum to which sugya he said this in.
I read the piece in March.
Do you remember what sugya it is? And what case? What's it? Because the classical case of Ruba de Issa Kamon is Bezdin, but that's not going to help me here. What would be the case of Ruba de Issa Kamon? Let's say, for example, I have nine. Let's say kosher butzer shops, and I have one.
I remember not understanding what I was saying.
Right, and I have one kosher butzer shop, and now I find a piece of meat. So I don't know if it came from here, it came from there. So the Torah says that's a Ruba de Issa Kamon.
That's an excellent method.
But it's purely statistical. It's purely mathematical. And yet the Torah says that I can determine the nature of the meat.
From what he was saying, again, it didn't make sense to me. It still doesn't make sense. Is that in when it's Ruba the Issa Kamon, it's not talking about this, whereas Ruba the Lesser Kamon is talking about this.
Right. But that's what I think is the Yesod.
But I can't.
That this case itself is also governed by the same rule that generated the Ruba the Lesser Kamon. The Ruba the Lesser Kamon is a result of some sort of rule, whether it's a psychological rule, whether it's a biological rule, And that's the nature of the universe. And therefore, every individual should be anticipated. We anticipate that he'll behave the way the universe was created. That's a ruba de lesser kamon. Ruba de isa kamon is just a cold, calculated statistical probability theory, which doesn't really tell me anything about this individual case. There's no reason why he himself should belong to that rov and not to this mirut. It's just that the Torah tells you that's the way that you're being machriya the suffolk. You don't know anything about him. And that remains on a lower level than chazak. So if Yirtzeh Hashem we get a hold of that sefer.
You want me to try?
You know, if it was a choice, Sam, between that and the Manchester, the PhD thesis, I would rather Manchester. You know what I'm saying? Even if you give me only 10 pages, I want to enjoy seeing it.
You're going to have to look at it before you decide.
Is it
Pemberanchi or where?
This is Rabbi Berman.
And then. You know, his son-in-law was killed by the Arabs. So the next sugya that I want to cover, I see we're running out of time here, is what's called Akum Adaite Dinafshe Kosev. The question is, if a guy writes a get, and there's a sugya about this in Gittin Daf Chav Gimel, the Gemara says that the get is Varei Posel. And if she, you know, we treat her, if she received this get as an Eishesish Gemura, there's no suffix. Why? Because get has to be written Lishma. And the guy is Adaiti Dinafshe Kofit. He doesn't have Lishma in mind. He's writing because you're paying him a salary to write, whatever he's motivated by. So I had a question on this sugya. It's my own question. If you take a look at Rashi carefully in Gittin Daf Chav Gimel, Rashi writes, he adds one word to the Gemara. The Gemara says, Adaiti Dinafshe Kokosiv, and Rashi says, Shema Adaiti Dinafshe Kokosiv. So my question to you is, if Rashi's saying Shema, he seems to be admitting that there is a possibility that the guy would write the get Lishma. Shema, but maybe he wrote it Adaiti Dinafshe, and he didn't write it Lishma. So what happens if I would have in Metzius a get that was written by a guy and he wrote it with a machsheves lishma? I might not know that he did, but what's the halachic implication if in fact he did have a machsheves lishma? And perhaps we could suggest that although Rashi used the word shema, what Rashi means is that shema is built into the nature of a guy, so to speak, that a guy, when he writes a get, maybe he didn't write it Lishma. And since he didn't write it Lishma, we can't use his machshava to he makes his own decision, Rashi says. You know, the Baal ordained him or authorized him to write a get for himself. But the guy decided to write it for other reasons. We don't know if he did or he didn't. But since he makes that decision on his own, then he's never really doing it because the Baal told him to do it. That's what Rashi understands by Adaiti Dinafshe Kovet. In other words, there's halacha in writing a get lishma that has to be b'tzivui Baal. Tzivui Baal means that the sofer writes the get because the Baal commanded him to write the get. That we could say if the sofer is a Jew, but if the sofer is a guy, and there's a possibility that he'll write it for his own reasons, meaning he's a Baal Abos Avzich Alein, he'll make the decision for himself. In such a case, that you can never say that he wrote it machmas tzivui habal. And if that be the case, then the get is posel b'toras vaday. Rashi doesn't mean to say shema. We don't know the status of the get. No one's going to say that a get that was written by a guy creates a sofek gerushin with all the implications thereof. No, she's a vaday eshesish. There's no sofek get. The get is not worth the paper it's written on. I'll ask, but maybe the guy had a machsheves lishma. If he had a machsheves lishma, that's not machmas tzivui aval. That was his own decision. You know, he could go. He's a free thinker, and he might have thought that it's worth it for him to write the get for any number of reasons. If he happened to hit the right jackpot, you know, and he said, "Well, I'm going to write it because of the baal's tzivui,"
still won't help.
It still won't help. I mean, that's just by coincidence, by happenstance. He wrote it. He got it right. You know. He won the lottery, and he wrote it because it's Tzivir HaBal. But in and of itself, the guy doesn't have the capacity of creating a kiyum, a tziruf to the Tzivir HaBal, to say that his writing is mitzuruf to the Tzivir HaBal, and therefore the get is not lishma. Okay, Rabbosai, we'll stop here. And again, there are a lot of svarim that would help us here. Maybe some of them I could get a hold of, some of them I don't have access to. And we'll see.
Maybe can I ask you a question?